And as the play goes around, before we read the scripture and have the preaching this morning, we're actually going to do something a little bit different. We're going to have a testimony from Brother Chris Segura. Now, as you know, several months ago, we had planned a soul-winning marathon in Johannesburg, South Africa. And it was just planned as a one-day thing. It was just going to be a quick one-off deal. Get in there, do some soul winning, meet up with some Faithful Word listeners, get out of there. But I ended up being banned from South Africa, and my flights were canceled. I didn't get to go there. Well, Brother Chris Segura was able to go to South Africa and basically do the work that I would have done. Except that instead of being there for just one day, we sent him there for 2 weeks. And he had a couple of other workers from our church with him. And so he was able to really accomplish a lot for the Lord in that time. And we don't even have time, honestly, to talk about all the stuff that our church has been doing over the last few months, because the whole service would just be announcements. Okay, but I just wanted to highlight this one testimony of Brother Chris Segura from South Africa. We've got people right now down in Guyana. We've had people in Botswana, South Africa. Over the last several months, we've had soul winners and preachers from our church trained and sent out of this church, traveling all over the world, preaching in schools. I mean, just a couple days ago, Brother Charlie Jeffrey from our church, many of you know him, he just preached in a school to 668 students down in Guyana in a public high school. So we've got really cool stuff going on all over the world for the glory of God. And so at this time, I want Brother Chris Segura just to give a testimony about his trip to South Africa and what he was able to do for the Lord down there, what God opened up for us down there over the past couple weeks.
Oh, man, I don't even know where to begin, but I'll try, you know, to cover as much as possible because I want it to be a blessing for you guys and an encouragement. But first thing I want to say is thank you to everybody. Literally, I felt like it was a gift, a privilege to go there. And, you know, anything full-time like this, since I've been a member of Faithful Word Baptist Church, I've just been faithful, just going soul winning, doing what I can, tithing, just doing my part. But you know what? As I was over there, I couldn't stop but think of you guys. I was like, man, you know what? This would not be possible if it weren't for the people just being faithful, supporting us, not just in this church, but people throughout the world. As I was over there, I just couldn't just stop, you know, thinking to myself, like, man, I would have never been able to do this in a million years. You know, it's just incredible what had happened. But also, you know, just want to quickly talk about the beginning, because we had no idea what was going to happen. You know, Pastor briefed me, and he was just saying, look, you could get deported the first day, you could be the entire time, I don't know. But one thing that I want you to get in your head right now is that it's a very dangerous place, a very dangerous place. And you know what? I've never had life insurance ever in my life until I decided to go over there. I quickly just got life insurance. I don't know why. I'm just like, how much, babe? $500,000? Let's do it, you know? $27 a month? Let's do it. Hopefully my insurance company doesn't see this video. You know, but literally, that's where it all began. Pastor just putting it in my head. It's a dangerous place. I figured, okay, I get it. You know, there's shooting, stabbings, murders, all of that wonderful stuff, you know, that keeps people from going out and serving God. You know, but that day when he briefed me, the Sunday night when he briefed me, you know, he just started coming up with a plan. Look, this is what I want you to do. You know, find the people that are close to the pastor that's going to be meeting us down there. You know, just get with them, get with as many people, find our listeners, see who goes down there, just do your part, you know, but don't get killed. You know, that was the big thing. Just don't get killed. So what happened was we ended up just, or at least, you know, I didn't expect it. I thought I was going to be down there the entire time by myself. I didn't know what was going to happen, but God made it worked out amazingly where he sent me a couple of people like Pastor had mentioned, and it was basically a four-man team the entire time down there. You know, it was me, the pastor that's down there, and two other members, and man, you know what? They were so awesome. They were just the best. You know, I could not have been blessed by God. You know, this whole trip was a miracle. You know, since day one, I didn't know what was going to happen. All I knew, I was going down there, and I was just going to have to figure it out as I went. You know, but I knew that I was going down there to win souls. I figured, you know what? That's the primary reason I'm going down there, try to do some soul winning. So I arrived that night, and praise God, everything worked out. Not 100% perfect. It did lose my luggage, of course. You know, it didn't show up. You know, but it was a bunch of Bibles, flash drives that we wanted to give to the pastor, to give to the members of his church. You know, but it was nighttime when I arrived, and we just started driving, and we're like, okay, cool, he's going to take me to the place where I'm staying. And I noticed right away that he's just driving through Cape Town, and he's running red lights. And I'm thinking, what in the world's going on? So he's running red lights, and I just had a camera kind of aimed at him, started to record right away. And he right away just explained, look, this is okay. We can run these red lights at night because these areas are where they do a lot of carjackings. So as soon as you stop, you know, you don't know who's in this area, and there's big gangs in this area, and that's what they're looking for. Somebody that's dumb enough to stop, you know, for longer than 30 seconds, because they will take your car, they will take your life, they will steal it from you. So I'm just like, go ahead, run them all. You know, that's fine with me. Just run as many, just get me to my place. I'm a little worn out, just get me to where I'm staying. So his name is Pastor Bogart. You know, he's a non-denominational pastor, but he seems to be leaning more towards our way of doing business, which was great. You know, so I don't know a whole lot of his history, how it all started. You know, but he was definitely leaning towards our way of doing business, especially with the door-to-door soul winning. He had never really done that. His church had no idea what that was about. You know, his assistant pastor mentioned after we talked to him that he had known a little bit about it, but they were not doing it. That was a thing. Their biggest way of getting people saved is through hunger. Pretty much they would just feed a lot of hungry people and just bring them in and try to get them the gospel, or crusades. You know, that's the big thing down there is crusades, where they just have, I think, a couple of days of just preaching. People come in and they try to get them saved. You know, but he realized while he was down here and, you know, coming across Pastor Anderson, that they're missing out. They're missing out on a tremendous opportunity to get people saved, and that's by door to door. He realized that right away. He's like, you know what? I've never really known much about door to door. He came down there for a couple of weeks, went soul winning, and he was amazed. He was amazed by our church, especially the young kids. He was shocked how he saw young kids going with their fathers, going out door to door, because he saw that that was the next generation, and he felt like that's something he needs to take back to his church and get it started as fast as possible. You know, but he didn't know where to begin. That's why he was asking for help, and Pastor was gracious enough to send us down there. So the first day that we had together, you know, we were just helping him out as much as possible, just trying to get everything ready for Saturday, because he was going to try to feed about 1,000 people that are very poor, starving in his area near his church. So we're just having him gather around all Cape Town. He was getting a bunch of donations from this individual, that individual. But what I noticed, one of the people that I ran into who knew about Pastor Anderson was a manager. His name was Nico, and Nico was a manager at a grocery store. But it was a supermarket, but he was in charge of the grocery department. So he had never really known about Pastor Bogart at all. But what had happened was, I believe it was after Pastor Bogart started posting himself pretty much with Pastor Anderson on his Facebook, that this listener who came across Pastor Anderson through TV, because South Africa Media, you know, that's what they were trying to do, is keep Pastor Anderson from entering into the country. And I don't know to what extent they had him on TV every day, but they mentioned that they had him on TV a lot. So that's how they came across Pastor Anderson, is just by seeing him in the news. So what had happened, he just started looking into Pastor Anderson, because this guy wasn't that brainwashed to just believe the media right out the go. So he decided, I'm going to check this guy out. So, of course, he said, I went to Pastor's website, started listening to the preaching, and I realized that this guy was the real deal. And with that, he wanted to help out Pastor Bogart, so he got a hold of Pastor Bogart and says, look, I heard you've been affiliated with Pastor Anderson. I've been listening to him on his website, you know, on YouTube. And I believed him, because when he picked us up one time, sure enough, in his radio, he's not playing music. He's playing Pastor Anderson's sermons. You know, so he was either faking it really well, or he was a, you know, hardcore listener of Pastor Anderson, because, you know, he couldn't really go to church on Sundays because he was a manager and they make him work Sundays. But he did have a Sunday free later on, and he did come to Pastor Boga's church to try to get some preaching. You know, so what I was amazed was that this guy, just by, you know, listening to Pastor Anderson, you know, ended up down the road, like, helping Pastor Bogart out, you know. So in a way, they were uniting through the preaching that was coming through this church, which I thought was really amazing, because you really don't know who's listening to Pastor Anderson or to what degree they take him, you know, serious. But that was just one example. So then Saturday comes along, and we knew that Pastor Bogart was kind of targeted by the media, especially even more because he was now paired up with Pastor Anderson to some degree. So on Saturday, I had no idea what was going on. He just kept briefing us, this is a dangerous area, don't get separated, don't go off on your own. I know that back home, you can just pick any street and just take off, you know, but this is not the area to do it at, you know. So he was making it very clear, don't walk off, stay together, don't just do what you want to do, check with me first, not because I want to control you, just because I want to make sure that you guys survive, you know, your next week or so here. But he also mentioned that the media had somehow reported that they're going to keep an eye on him on Saturday. So we had no idea what was going on. You know, so I'm just thinking in the back of my mind, well, you know what, just be prepared to be arrested. You know, and that's kind of what I went over there with that mentality. Just get prepared to be arrested. Who knows what will happen? Maybe they'll keep me here longer to set an example out of me. I just didn't know, but I was just preparing for the worst, as you can already see, you know, for me getting life insurance. But that's another story. You know, so Saturday comes along, and right away, I mean, people are gathering up to help feed the poor. And we see police officers already walking around, about five of them. And we don't know if they're there to arrest us. We had already taken a little bit of footage. You know, a little bit of footage of our first day, which was Friday. So Saturday, we didn't know if that was it. We didn't know if that was, you know, game over, it's over. They came and tried to figure out, try to find a reason to just kind of detain us or deport us. So whatever video we had in the camera, I'm not going to say who was there. You guys can probably figure it out. But, you know, she told me not to mention her name. But this other person that came to help us, we're just dumping all the video on her. He's like, take these SD cards and hide them. So I don't know where she put them. You know, when she was there, later I found out she hid him very well, and you could talk to her where she hid it, all right? You know, but it didn't turn out to be anything. I think they just showed up in case something was going to happen. I think they were there for our safety, because later on, a police captain showed up with another police officer and some children that are from the neighborhood, just kind of helping us, you know, to just feed people. But what had happened is that we just started talking to the police officer, and we just kind of started to double check and see just how bad this place is. And so one of the police officers, we started to talk to her, you know, and she ended up getting saved, so which is why she was opening up more towards us. But we started asking her about the area where Pastor Borgaw works. You know, how bad is this area? And right away she said, it is very bad. This area is very bad. And I was also wondering how two white guys are in this area, and how did you guys get here without getting hurt? Because over in South Africa, they either consider you white, colored, and black. And I wasn't black, I wasn't considered colored, so they considered me white. You know, that's what they considered me. And she told me, look, these gang members, they know what they're doing. You know, it's like you can hide your money anywhere you want on your body, but they know you have something on you, a credit card, cash, something, you know, and they will not hesitate to just take advantage of you, especially since you're feeding the poor, which was true because this was on Saturday. Friday, we get enough meat to just kind of pass out to an area they call it Malawi Camp. It's a very poor area, and so Pastor Borgaard, you know, said it over again, just stay with me, don't get separated. You know, so we go there, and we're just passing out meat packets, you know, to poor people after we gave them the gospel. And what had happened was, while we're passing out meat, sure enough, these four, you know, I guess you can call them thugs, just start coming towards us. You know, and the other soul winner that was with us, you know, it could happen to me, it could happen to anybody. He just goes into soul winning mode and starts witnessing the people. But praise God, he wasn't that dumb. He realized what was going on because it started to surround him. So he played it cool, just kept witnessing. And at that point, Pastor Borgaard saw it, and he said, look, go grab him right now. That is very dangerous. They're about to rob him. So sure enough, I just going up to him and said, look, man, we got to go. Let's just get out of here. Grab the guy and kind of left. You know, but sure enough, just talking to this guy, yeah, they were trying to rob him. They were trying to pull out his phone. You know, they were saying, hey, you know what, I'm interested in coming to the church. You know, what's your phone number? Give me your phone number. Let me call you, see if it works. But that's just what they do to get somebody to pull their phone and they steal it from them. You know, but that was just kind of like the first step that, you know, it took for us to just realize, okay, this is kind of an issue now. You know, but what had happened later on, you know, on Saturday is that we fed a few people, witnessed to about maybe 300 or 400 people. You know, not really sure who got saved. People obviously raised their hand, wanted to get saved, wanted to pray and ask God to save them. So we did that. You know, so that's what ended up happening on Saturday. Sunday, the first Sunday there, you know, pastor told me if I could preach. I'm like, sure. So he just wanted me to kind of go over the gospel with his people. And the thing I like about Pastor Borgaard is that Pastor Borgaard, you know, to me seems like someone that really cares, you know, because of the area that he's in. You know, not just that, but what made me think as well is that the guy obviously is never going to live a lifestyle, you know, like the average pastor here in America. You know, his house, you know, it's a very modest house. His church is a very modest church, very modest people. You know, but what I was thinking is, man, this guy really does care about his people because he's willing day in and day out to work in a very rough area. You know, and even himself, he's been a victim of crime as well. They've broken into his vehicle many times, you know, but he still keeps staying faithful, keeps trying to preach the gospel, be the best pastor that he can. But it made me wonder how many people here in America, I'm not just talking about this church, I'm just talking about throughout Bible colleges and everything else, how many of these people that want to be pastors would actually want to be a pastor if they were in his shoes? You know, I wonder how many will be just, you know, drawn away from just all the poverty and just the hard work that it takes to run the church. And there were other pastors down there as well that we were able to do seminars. You know, a couple of churches allowed us to do a soul winning seminar for his people, and another pastor allowed me to preach. Technically, allowed me to preach. He just told me to go up there and just say something, but I kind of took over the sermon and let the guest preacher. He ended up preaching for like 10 minutes. He was supposed to preach for 30 minutes. I ended up taking 20 minutes, but the guy probably forgave me by now. I don't know. You know, but just trying to cover as much as possible. But it was just a huge miracle, you know, from beginning to end, only because everything that pastor told me to do, God made it very easy. Pastor said, go over there, find his assistant pastor, try to get him motivated, encourage him. And that wasn't hard at all. As soon as we figured out who it was, he was all about soul winning, all about going door to door, you know, all about saving souls one-on-one individually. You know, he was all about it. His wife, you know, that's the thing about a pastor. If your wife's not in it, it's going to be very difficult to accomplish anything. But praise God, Pastor Bogart's wife, I mean, they're like one team, one dream, literally. You know, they're just as motivated to do more, step it up to the next, you know, level. The thing about her, she's a full-time nurse. You know, so on our Saturday, the second Saturday is when we're actually going to go soul winning door to door for at least an hour, hour and a half, as much as we can. Even the police told us don't stay in one area too long. You know, it's not like America. You can't just be in one house for 20 minutes. They'll target you right away, and then you'll be basically, you know, hurt pretty soon. So that's kind of our goal, just stay in the house or stay 10 minutes with one person and move on. But I like his wife's dedication because she ended up working on Friday night from 7 p.m. all the way to 7 a.m. You know, so we're trying to convince her just to go get some sleep, but she wouldn't have it. She's like, no, I want to go out for the first time ever door to door with my church, you know. I don't care what it takes. I'm all right. I can stay up a little longer. So she's never gone door to door ever. But she was able to pair up with another member, you know, of this church. And they were able to go out soul winning, and she liked it. And what had happened was I had preached on Sunday, the first Sunday, on just being ready. It was just a message called The Greatest Day of My Life. And it was really just about being ready to preach the gospel. You know, getting yourself prepared, not just getting yourself prepared, but also just staying ready, you know, because just as much as you need to prepare and get ready and become a good soul winner, I was just mentioning that it's almost just as much work to stay ready and be a good soul winner. And I have mentioned how I lost an opportunity to just witness to about 45 students, you know, one time. You know, I blew it because I wasn't ready to preach the gospel, you know, but then I mentioned an opportunity that came up down the road once I was a better soul winner where I got an opportunity to witness to somebody, you know, that was dying of cancer. You know, somebody had called me saying, hey, this person's not going to make it. They're going to die anytime. Can you come and give them the gospel? I was able to go, you know, and give them the gospel. And I was just telling people, look, this can happen anytime. This can happen, you know, in your life, somebody, you just never know, you know. And then what had happened was that day, I believe, or a little bit after that, there was a community worker that had called us, you know, and basically asked us if we can go meet a man who was dying of stage 4 cancer. You know, and she said, look, I will really love you guys to just come and give him the gospel, you know, witness to him. So I went there, and he was on his deathbed pretty much, and I gave him the gospel as best I could. But lucky enough, Pastor Bogart, you know, he was helping me out as well, you know, speaking Afrikaans, trying to get him saved. So I don't know, you know, what was going on when they were talking Afrikaans, but at the end of it all, Pastor Bogart told me, look, he believes what you told him, and he wants to pray to get saved. So we ended up praying with this man to get saved, and that was a big blessing. You know, but what was amazing was that, you know, it was just opportunity after opportunity, you know, where people kept saying, we want you to come here, but we really couldn't do much because we were limited, you know, to what we can do. We still had to kind of help Pastor Bogart to accomplish what he wanted to accomplish, you know, but I don't even know how much to cover. We just ended up, to kind of just highlight, we got about individually 75 people saved, individually, one-on-one. We were counting. But we wouldn't be surprised if more people got saved because we must have witnessed to at least 600 people. You know, it was about, you know, 500 people on a Saturday. We went to another pastor's church. He had about 40 people. And another pastor's church, he had about 60 people. Obviously, Pastor Bogart's church and just different groups here and there. So about 600 people got the gospel. And even in prison, you know, it was just really awesome how an idea would come up and God would just allow it to work out. And we weren't even planning to go to the prisons when we flew over there. But the pastor, we were just talking to him and said, how hard is it to get into the prisons? He's like, I don't know. He's like, you guys want to try the prisons? I'm like, sure. So he emailed somebody, they asked for our passport numbers, we email it back to them, and they're like, you guys are clear for tomorrow to come in at 10 a.m. and preach in the prisons. So we're like, wow, that's amazing. So we went there, and this is just how much of a miracle it was, because what happened was one of our members forgot their passport, and they told us, you must bring your passport. So we were thinking, all right, man, you're going to have to just wait in the vehicle. But then Pastor Bogart is like, well, let's see if God just allows him to go in. And sure enough, they just allowed him to go in without his passport. So when we went into the prisons, you know, they just opened it up to anybody. You know, they just opened it up to anybody, but only about 20 men came in the room. The other ones were just kind of outside, just checking it out. You know, and sure enough, we just, you know, were able to just preach to them. And about seven of them weren't 100% sure they were going to heaven. You know, but I already went to the gospel step by step. And then at the end of it all, we just told them, look, if you want to be saved right now, just go ahead and stay standing. The rest of you can sit down. You know, and we ended up just praying with about seven of them. You know, and they basically, I mean, it was pretty amazing because once we were done praying with them, you know, these were men that weren't sure. And I just kind of threw it out there and I said, look, you know, if anybody's 100% sure now, you know, that if you die, you go to heaven, you know, is there anybody here that just wants to tell us why? Just go ahead and do so. And there was like this old man, one of the prisoners, he just raised his hand. And he said, look, because we believe. That's what the guy said. You know, so that kind of made our day, you know, because he was one of the ones that wasn't sure. Then afterwards, we just said, hey, why would you be going to heaven? He said, because I believe. And that was really great. You know, so I got about 3 minutes left. But other than that, I think if, you know, I want to just finish it up by saying, look, thank you to you guys, literally. You know, just thank you. You know, you guys made it happen. I'm sure Brother Garrett knows what I'm talking about. Just being able to do it full time and just concentrating on souls the entire time. We wouldn't be able to do that if it weren't for these people. And not just these people, but anybody that helps out Pastor Anderson and just donates to the cause to get people saved. I'm just like, wow, I'm just so grateful that people were faithful. And it was what it was. You know, we were banned from South Africa, you know, but I don't know. I think we made a greater difference down the road. I really do believe that, you know. But other than that, thank you for Pastor Anderson for sending me there. You know, I didn't know if you were sending me there because you wanted me to get killed or because you really cared about me. You know.
Real quick.
You need to, there's a couple more stories that you need to tell.
All right, go
ahead. tell about how you got to witness to the crime boss. And okay. Also tell about how those guys were coming toward your car to bust out your window, and they ended up getting the guy behind you.
Okay, so we were still kind of naive how bad the area was. So we ended up going to dinner with one of the local, I mean, he used to be a pastor. Now he's more like just a guy who owns a business and helps out pastors. His name we call him Brother Johnny. So Brother Johnny took us to dinner, but he wanted to take us to the fanciest place he could afford. So he took us to, you know, this place that was, I mean, it was really nice. So he was sitting next to me. I just started talking to him. And I was just saying, look, just how bad is this area? Let me just get an idea. How bad is it? Oh, it's really bad. Like, really bad is what he tells me. He said, everybody says that, but I'm wondering, like, can I just go out and knock doors? I'm more trying to figure out, like, what kind of area he's working in and if it's a good idea for us just to go out soul winning for a couple hours or should we just cut it to 30 minutes or not. So I'm trying to, like, plan with this guy. And he's like, look, if you really want to get an idea of just how bad it is, you know, he said, look, you know, there's gangs out here, et cetera, et cetera. You know, but if you want to talk to someone that really knows it, if kids don't believe your pastor, he's like, you need to go talk to a gang leader. That's what he says, a gang leader. And I'm like, a what? He's like, there's this guy, you know, that, you know, we just happen to know. And he basically just kind of said, look, if you want to get the real deal, get a better idea, get some camera footage so you can take home. You know, if anybody knows how bad this area is, it's just a crime boss or whatever. So I'm like, okay, you know. I'm like, go for it, you know. It's like, you know, how easy can you set it up? He's like, well, let me find out. So I don't know. I guess he called somebody that knew somebody, knew this guy. He called him. He's like, all right, he can be here tomorrow at 10 a.m. Pastor Bogart was not for it at all. You know, Pastor Bogart's like, that is not a good idea at all. You know, I am not happy about it whatsoever. You know, this guy went to prison. He just got out of prison. He went to prison for 10 years for rape and murder, you know, and now you're going to interview him. He's like, I'm not happy about this idea at all. But if you guys want to do it, go ahead, you know, do what you have to do. And he's like, I just don't want nothing to do with him. You know, I just have no idea what he's really doing. He is still suspected, you know, of just being involved, you know, with crime in Cape Town, you know, but he is like their biggest criminal that they've had in a while. And he's in charge or was in charge, you know, because he never told us he was still in charge of it. But even the government thinks he still is, you know. They said this guy was in charge of the deadliest gang, you know, right now in Cape Town, the biggest and the deadliest, you know. So I don't know. I'm not happy about meeting the guy, but, you know, whatever. So we're like, hey, you know what? I don't care if it's a guy on the street or anybody. If there's an opportunity to get somebody saved, I'll take it, you know, but let's do it. So, you know, what's what it was. The next day we go to the restaurant, and I guess they had spoken with a pastor that got a hold of him, someone that he's really close with, you know, and he just came and right away, I think Pastor Bogart told him, look, this might be in a documentary. You know, they want to record, do an interview with him. And he's like, that is a terrible idea. He's like, I need to meet with you guys. So then this guy meets with us. It was another pastor. You know, he also used to be a gang leader. And he said, look, this guy's coming. You cannot record this guy at all. You know, he said, were you planning to record him? I'm like, yeah, I was planning to record him. You know, he's like, you cannot record him. He can't do interviews. It doesn't matter what type of media. He's not allowed to do any interviews with any media, you know, whatsoever. Because here's what's going to happen. If he ends up going back to prison, if he gets a parole violation whatsoever, he may take it out on Pastor Bogart. If he was the reason why he went back to prison, you know. So then at that point, I'm thinking, okay, maybe this is not a good idea. You know, it's like, okay, whatever. Let's just see what happens. So then what had happened was he kind of quickly gave us a history of him. And he was saying, yeah, you know what, this had happened. You know, he still has, like, people that want to kill him. So don't be too, you know, concerned if he just doesn't feel you guys when you guys meet. Because, you know, his brother, you know, they were trying to kill him, but it took it on his brother. His brother was burned alive. You know, so they pour gasoline on him and they burn him alive, kind of trying to kill him. And he still has other gangs that are in the area that basically want him dead, just kind of like as a trophy, they want his head. You know, so we're like, okay, no big deal. You know, it's like, whatever, you know, I just don't know what to think about it. But this guy ended up showing up. But first he sent in a guy to kind of scope out the area. You know, so he sends in a guy to scope out the area. He ends up grabbing the menu, orders for him. I guess he called him saying it was clear. And the guy was whatever, just comes in and he just sits down with us. You know, and at that point, I don't know, I wish we had it on camera, but he was definitely suspicious. He was looking at all of us, and we didn't know this, but they just invited him to just eat breakfast. They didn't tell him that there was going to be Americans there. You know, so now he shows up, and he's like, who the heck are you guys? So he sits down, and he's just kind of like, you know, it's just supposed to be me and you. What are these guys doing here? And so I just kind of try to open up to the guy and just explain to him, you know, what's going on. And I just told him, look, we're, you know, I'm an evangelist from America. I'm from Faithful Word Baptist Church. You know, my pastor, Stephen, you know, L. Anderson is the one that basically brought us here, as best I can remember. And then that's where he kind of stops. He's like, wait a minute. These guys are from the church of Pastor Stephen L. Anderson, the one that they banned? And he's just kind of like, what's up? You know? So he's kind of like that. It's like, what's up? You know? You know, so then he opens up. Like, he went from being serious, like, what in the world? So it's like, he's the guy, this guy, whatever, you know. And he's like, oh, what's up? Then he opened up. It's like, yeah, bring me my dinner, you know. Let's see what's going on, you know. So we were waiting for the dinner to come up. And he's like, look, we're just here, basically, you know, Pastor Bogart invited us. And we just want to have, you know, an opportunity. Or not even anything. We say, look, this is what we're doing. You know, we're just going around trying to get South Africans saved. We don't care who they are, poor, rich, middle class, gang members. It doesn't matter. You know, he cares about the poor. He cares about the hungry. He cares about people, you know. So that's what we're here. You know, and pretty much all we're basically here to do is just give the gospel, and this is how we do it. And I have my tablet there, and so I'm just giving them, you know, all the verses that we use. And it was funny because the other soul winner that was with us from our church, you know, he took a picture of me, you know, right when I was talking about that it's eternal. And I'm not sure if he posted it, but my tablet, I used it for soul winning, but it was a really funny picture because I'm here, I'm talking to a crime boss, you know. Here I'm talking to a crime leader, and then I have my tablet like this in the picture, and I didn't know he was taking pictures. And all you see on my tablet, because I blew it up nice and big, and it says gift on it. So I'm just like this talking to him. It says the word gift. You know, so I get to that point. And he was looking at me very serious. Every verse that I went through, he was basically looking at it. And I didn't pray with the guy, but I went all the way to the end. And I was confirming with him. It's like, look, do you believe this? Is this what you believe? And the guy's looking at me. It's like, that's what I believe. So I told him, well, this is what you believe. Let me show you what Romans 10:9, 10:10, and 10:13 basically say. And it says, and if you do that, you'll be saved. And this is what I told him. And you're saved. You're saved forever. And I don't know if he believed it before he started talking to me, but this is the last thing that he basically told me. And then he kind of got into a conversation and started to eat. But he looks at me and he says, you know what? Being born again is forever. That's what the guy says. You know, it's a one-time thing. And he kind of looked up like more relaxed, you know, kind of like, yeah, you know, you just confirmed it for me, you know. But I don't know if the guy got saved or not, you know, but he was just kind of trying to, you know, also give us the heads up like, guys, look, I don't go to church. You know, I don't go to church right now because it's very difficult, especially the environment and the life that I live, you know. I have to kind of constantly watch what I'm doing, watch what I'm saying. I got to keep an eye out for people, you know. But, you know, we tell them we just want to give you a gift, you know, and we busted out with the New World Order Bible versions, and we're just going to give it to them. And so what was funny is that the guy really wanted it. You know, he really wanted it. So when I showed it to him, that's when he said, you know what, I don't go to church because of this, this, and this. You know what, I'm trying to get life, but the environment that I'm in is very hard. But I will take this. This will help me, is what the guy says. This will help me. And I'm thinking, well, if you want to take that, let me give you some flash drives. You know, so I say, here, you know, these flash drives will also help you out as well. So I'm starting to give him flash drives. And then after everything was said and done, I mean, the guy, whether he's saved or not, I don't know. Based off his answer, I would say he has a high chance. You know, based on his lifestyle, it's very difficult to see change. You know, very difficult to see change, especially when he knows that he still has a bounty on his head and other gang members basically want to retaliate on him because of all the stuff that he did. You know, so we just left it at that. But we gave him a T-shirt, and I didn't realize what the T-shirt said, but you guys probably saw the Facebook. We gave him a T-shirt that says, "Soul winning is not a crime." You know, so the other guy... So the other guy gives it to him, and I'm like, and he was really happy too, because then we kind of walked him to his car, and he's like, "Yeah, thank you so much." He puts it on, and then the other soul winner, you know, he's just like, "Hey, can you put it on for us?" So he's like, "Yeah, absolutely." Puts it on, and I'm like, "Man, if anybody knows what crime is not, it's a crime, Lord." You know.
Thanks so much, Brother Chris. Great testimony, huh? So he, you know, while they were over there, the team had 75 people saved, you know, one-on-one, confirmed that for sure understood the gospel and got saved. But they also witnessed to literally hundreds and hundreds of other people, you know, where they're feeding just hundreds and hundreds of people and preaching to crowds and just sort of, you know, having them raise their hand, leading them in a mass prayer. So, you know, we don't count those because we don't really know what's on their heart because we can't talk to them one-on-one. And he's able to witness that crime boss, and he was also able to witness to a person dying of AIDS. He was able to, I mean, he just, story, he could be up here for hours, you know, but I just wanted to give you a little bit of that so that you can understand some of the great work that some of our church members have been involved in all over the world. So praise God for that.